This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Taylor Quimby, in for Virginia Prescott. We all know the rules when it comes to creating passwords. Don't rely on basic personal information. Don't use the name of your dog. Use a combination of numbers, lowercase and uppercase letters. And most importantly, don't use the same password for everything. So how come so few people actually follow those rules?
The password I use now is my husband's shield number when he was in the New York City Police Department.
My password for so many of my websites includes a zip code of a place in the Caribbean where I hope to live someday.
But I decided to do my name, Dylan Ward, backwards, which was Nollet Draw.
But then we realized we both use the same password. We both use our parents' phone number as our iPhone passwords.
Ian Urbina is an investigative reporter for the New York Times, and his article for the New York Times Magazine, called The Secret Life of Passwords, is an intimate portrait of our human need to attach meaning to even the most meaningless aspects of our lives. The article is accompanied by a series of audio interviews. You heard excerpts from just a few of them a minute ago. And Ian, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
So you started collecting people's passwords years ago. Do you remember the first one that made you realize you were onto something here?
Actually, I do, because there was an awkward, funny conversation I had with my cousin where we were talking about our passwords, and we both realized that we had what we now call keepsake passwords, ones that had meaning and sort of a funny reason for them. And mine was an embarrassing admission in that it was Kick Kelly, which was the name of, I'm going to sound horribly mean, but it was the name of the dog that we had. And he was a very frustrating dog, always doing things he shouldn't have been. And one day I had to set my password, and I was frustrated at the passwords and I was frustrated at the dog. And so I combined the two.
And so the idea being you wanted to kick Kelly, the dog.
That's right. I wanted to kick Kelly and I wanted to kick the passwords. And so I thought I would codify it into a code.
Well, it's funny because as you write about this topic, you sort of tell the story of how a lot of these really personal passwords come out of frustration.
Yeah, I mean, the fascinating thing was the range. You know, so some folks seem to have motivational passwords, you know, kind of the time they wanted to run in the half marathon, or, you know, to quit smoking, or, you know, a reminder to call their mother. Others had a built-in venting mechanism where it was a way to let off steam. And so it might be sort of a joke at the boss's expense, or a nickname for that person you really don't like. And it gives you a sort of chuckle each time you type it in. It's a sort of inside joke with yourself. So yeah, there was a real diversity in the purpose that people had buried in their passwords.
There's a few really haunting stories from the article. One of the most revealing for me anyway, comes from a woman that you spoke to, I think just on a park bench, a stranger. And she told you that after her son died, she discovered his password contained a secret that she had never known. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I mean, it was both a really poignant interaction. In some ways, I marveled that she was telling me this. But the password was Lambda69. And the story was that her son had committed suicide several years earlier. And she had been going through his room and had found a piece of paper at his desk with his password on it. And she, at the time, didn't know anything about Lambda or 69, so she went on the internet and soon started realizing that Lambda is a common historical signature, you know, symbol in gay history. And 1969 is the date of the Stonewall riot,
right?
A key moment. And she started realizing that her son had been gay, something she had not realized before his death.
It seems like this is such a difficult subject to get people to open up about. I mean, we all know we're supposed to keep our passwords secret, and yet you spoke to people on airplanes, this woman on a park bench. Did you have a strategy for talking to people to get them to open up?
That was sort of one of the surprises that kept me going all the while. It was that people were willing, even eager, to tell me these stories, and I couldn't figure out why for the longest time. And I still don't know for sure, but I have a theory. My strategy typically was just to tell them the notion, the notion that there's this subspecies of passwords that are not like the rest. They're emotionally imbued and they have a backstory to them. And once it crystallizes, people would register and realize that that spoke to them, and indeed they had one of their own. And my theory was that, you know, people were willing, eager to do that, partially, I think, because there's a collective frustration and tension that we all experience, both from the overload of data in the current moment that we live with, and also just sort of a pervasive fear that is real and legitimate, but hugely weighing on us, a fear of, you know, that we might get hacked. And those two things put pressure on us, and I think there's this cathartic moment that came in these conversations where people said, you know what, I don't care, I'm just going to tell you this, even if I have to go and change my password afterward.
There's one incredibly moving story from the article, and I want to play the audio here. This is an interview with Howard Lutnick. He was chief executive of the financial service firm Cantor Fitzgerald.
Cantor Fitzgerald employed 960 people on the 101st to the 105th floors of the World Trade Center. The plane came in below our floors and eliminated any way that they could get out of the buildings. We lost every single person who was at the office that morning. I said, look, we have two choices. We can close the firm and go to our friends' funerals. 700 funerals, which is 20 funerals a day, every day for 35 straight days. Or we'd probably have to work harder than we'd ever worked before, try to save the firm. The words that came out from everybody were unanimous. They were going to do everything they possibly could to help the families of those who were killed. And the only way we could help them would be to have a company. Our main computers were in the World Trade Center. We have these backup computers. You need passwords to bring them up, but the people who had the passwords were killed. When trying to figure out what the passwords are, you just couldn't ask someone a business question. It didn't feel appropriate, and it wasn't appropriate, but you know, for me to talk to the family was natural and important to me. When you actually understand, you can have a conversation that's entirely different than other people. I couldn't communicate with them in the same way if my brother hadn't been killed. At some point, towards the end of the conversation, I would say, I need to turn my systems on so I can rebuild the company. And they would tell us stuff. And, you know, and I would always ask, did he have a nickname? Because sometimes I had learned that people use nicknames as their passwords. And, you know, when you ask a widow, you know, 2 days after her husband was killed, you know, did he have a nickname? And they'd say something like, you know, Batman. And, you know, they would laugh. And so we would have all sorts of conversations, you know, just looking for things that would assist in giving us an area in which to try to break in. And really, for the first 48 hours, what we did is we broke into our own computer system to rebuild the company so we could take care of our friends' families.
I'm talking about digital passwords as personal keepsakes, and joining me is Ian Urbina. He's an investigative reporter for the New York Times. And that story you just heard came from Howard Lutnick. He's chief executive of the financial service firm Cantor Fitzgerald. Now, that story is so haunting, and it makes me think about the fact that a password is a secret. And so for your password, instead of a random assortment of numbers and letters, people often choose to really reveal secrets about themselves.
In some ways, these are the anti-password passwords, right? So they're not disposable. They're not anonymized. You know, they're not meaningless. They are surprisingly poignant and pretty and personal. And in that Cantor Fitzgerald anecdote, you know, you see that the very thing that we're not supposed to do, the very thing that makes our repertoire of passwords weak, these keepsake passwords, are the very thing that allowed that firm to stay alive.
Was part of your hope with this article, and I'm going to call it a project because it seems like collecting all these passwords is more than just a story, but was part of the idea to document them before they disappear? I mean, it seems like experts all sort of agree that the future of security has more to do with thumbprints and digital keys than it does with passwords, these, you know, random collections of digits.
Yeah, I mean, that was another epiphany along the way, right, that we are immersed in passwords. I think the average person has 40 or so in their life. And we live now. And so we can't think of a time where there wouldn't be passwords. But most people I talk to sort of who take a long dure view of it point out that, number one, your grandparents or great-grandparents didn't have passwords of this sort, certainly not as many, and your great-grandchildren probably won't either. So this is a blink in history when passwords are this universal burden that much of the globe suffers. And that struck me as sort of interesting anthropologically. You know, we should study it a little, this institution, the password, the digital password, and also not just study it from a security perspective, but also look at it from, you know, where's its humanity and its illogic and rationality. And so that was part of the goal.
Do you want to share your passwords at all?
I don't. I'm not a digital nudist, as we described in the story, someone who's willing to just throw all care to the wind and put their password out there. I think I'll keep mine secret.
Ian Urbina, investigative reporter for The New York Times. There's a link to his incredible article, The Secret Life of Passwords, at wordofmouthradio.org. And Ian, thank you so much for speaking with me today.
Thanks for having me.